On our show yesterday, we took a closer look at Governor Evers' budget and what it does for criminal justice reform. We heard from Evers' secretary-designee of the Department of Corrections, who says the budget takes some steps, but it's just the first step. Today, we hear from someone who thinks the Evers budget doesn't do enough to make big changes in the state's justice system. David Liners is the state director of Wisdom, a grassroots faith-based organization advocating for criminal justice reform. David, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we heard, as we said, from Kevin Carr yesterday with the Department of Corrections. He made the case that, okay, there are some things in the budget, but wait and see. We're going to do some more stuff in the near future. As you look at the budget, what has you worried when it comes to criminal justice reform?
So there's a few things. I mean, well, I will say there are a couple of good things having to do with mental health, having to do with job training, et cetera. What really has us concerned very especially is the fact that the governor's budget, particularly the capital budget, calls for actually increasing the size of the Wisconsin prison system, adding beds, adding barracks, which leads one to believe that there's not a very aggressive plan to reduce the prison population. I think as a first step to reduce the prison population by half, it doesn't seem like you would expand the capacity. So that's probably the biggest concern. And the fact that the governor is being very slow in doing some common sense things that could actually be reducing the prison population right now.
For example, what kind of things would you like to see that might help to do that?
Well, one thing, kind of in a sense the lowest hanging fruit, is we have 3,000 people who are eligible for parole in the system. These are people who were convicted in the last century by judges who expected them to get out on parole after a certain amount of time. And that system is basically shut down, or it's gotten incredibly, incredibly slow. There are literally hundreds and hundreds of people who are eligible for release. They've done everything they were supposed to do. And it's just that system. And the governor still hasn't appointed a new chair for the parole commission. That's something he could do and could actually make a point of moving very quickly. A second thing that could be done is to immediately start cutting back the number of crimeless revocations, people being sent back to prison for technical violations of terms of supervision, even though they haven't been convicted of a new crime. That's 3,000 new admissions a year. That's almost 5,000 people in our prisons who aren't there because of having committed a crime. They're there because of a technical violation of a rule. Those are two things that could very immediately, very quickly reduce the prison population.
Now, those are things that might not be included but could be in separate proposals. The parole board appointment, of course, the governor could do. Some of the other things might require legislative approval. Are you hopeful that some of those changes will be along in the months to come?
Well, certainly the parole thing is entirely in the hands of the governor. That's 100% his call. As far as revocations, most all of those crimeless revocations are discretionary, and actually the Department of Corrections has jurisdiction over that discretion of deciding what they're going to do. Very few of those people by legislation need to go back. One thing that we're hopeful for legislatively is that the Treatment Alternatives and Diversions Program, which the governor did propose $1 million a year increase, even though when he was running he promised a $15 million a year increase, but the million is a step in the right direction. But we're thinking that the legislature might actually see their way to increasing that by a lot more than $1 million a year. It's a surefire way to reduce the prison population, reduce recidivism, and actually save money. The Treatment Alternatives and Diversions saves us $2 for every dollar it spends.
Talking to David Liners, State Director of Wisdom, a grassroots faith-based organization advocating for criminal justice reform, talking about prospects for that kind of reform in the new Evers administration. Let's talk about the juvenile justice system. That's been a big story in Wisconsin at Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake schools. They are scheduled to be closed at some point. The timeline seems a little uncertain as they look for more local institutions to replace those. What are you watching for on that story?
So I'll start by saying that's something that our organization we don't have a lot of expertise on, so I'm speaking with a little less certainty than about other things. I think one of the things we'd really like to see on that, though, is to see things explained better, to see things communicated better to the community. I think that there's a lot of confusion as to what these more local facilities are supposed to look like, what they're supposed to be for. I know people certainly don't want to just replicate Lincoln Hills by having smaller Lincoln Hills scattered around the state. I think there needs to be much more public conversation about what we need, what kind of facilities we really need that are actually going to help kids. Because, boy, kids that young, we really need to do everything we can to help them get better. They have a lot of years ahead of them.
Turning back to adult correctional facilities, in our prisons now, there's been concern nationwide over the use of solitary confinement. Where do you see Wisconsin right now when it comes to solitary?
So we made a little progress a few years ago. Secretary Wall actually took some steps that cut back the amount of use of solitary confinement. But we still have, I would say it's nearly 1,000 people in solitary confinement, and there's no good reason for it. There's absolutely no reason we have to keep people locked alone in a room in solitary confinement. And in some cases, we have people in Wisconsin who've been in solitary confinement for decades, like for more than 20 years in a row. That's something that just needs to stop. It's senseless. Our former Secretary of Corrections, Rick Ramish, when he went to Colorado, saw the light. He ended the use of solitary confinement and actually saw the violence level in prisons drop dramatically. It doesn't make anybody safer. It just makes people sick.
We've got the governor's budget proposal on the table. State Republicans in the legislature have proposed some of their own reform legislation. Are there parts of that you're looking at that you think could be steps in the right direction?
So I'm not entirely I'm not well versed in some in what all the Republicans have done. I do know that there is kind of some very much some consensus about the treatment alternatives and diversions. I know that there's some consensus about needing to do some things about revocations. I actually do think this is an area where there can be a lot of bipartisan work together, but we need some leadership.
Now, you've pointed to reforms in the past in Texas as successful, maybe things we could learn from looking at here in Wisconsin. What kind of things are they taking up?
So one of the biggest things that they've done in Texas is actually to cut down dramatically on the number of crimeless revocations. That's been their number one reform. And they're actually closing facilities. So they're not talking about adding to their capacity. They're actually closing facilities, partly because they're finding other ways to hold people accountable who are on supervision without constantly bouncing people back into jail or prison. They've also expanded their earned early release, kind of put more resources into getting people treatment who are in prison so that they can earn their way out a little bit earlier, and that's also helped them to actually close facilities. And Texas's crime rate is dropping faster than the national average.
Let's talk about that revocation issue a little more. You've mentioned it. What does that look like? What kind of things are people finding themselves back in prison for?
So when a person is on extended supervision after they get out, after they've served their prison sentence and they're on extended supervision, they're given a list of rules. It's at least 18. In some cases, it's more than 50. And those include things like, believe it or not, one of the rules is you can't miss a scheduled or unscheduled meeting with your parole officer. I'm not quite sure how you're supposed to be at the unscheduled one. People get bounced back into prison for failing a drug test, for missing an appointment or being late for appointments. Sometimes people need to be in their house by a certain hour and they get a phone call. And if they're not there exactly at that time, you can wind up being revoked for any police contact, which can include being in the car when somebody you're riding with gets a ticket if you forget to report that to your parole officer. There's a lot of reasons. Traveling outside the county without permission. There's a lot of rules. Going into a bar. So there's a lot of rules for people, and it depends very much, it seems, on the luck of the draw that if it's almost impossible for someone to keep every one of those rules to the letter for years. And if parole officers and their supervisors choose to do so, they can send people back to jail and prison or hold them in a really inhumane place like the Milwaukee Secure Detention Facility for 10 or 21 days.
Well, the concern, I guess, would be that if they can't follow some of the little laws as they are on extended supervision, can we be concerned that they might break the law in more significant ways? So we need this more stringent guidance. What do you want to see instead of that?
So among other things, there's no evidence that failure to keep technical rules of supervision has any correlation to somebody's propensity to commit a crime. I think you and I probably break all kinds of little rules every day, and we don't face going back to prison for them. So there's other ways to hold people accountable. There's fines, there's community service, there's extending the amount of time that you're on supervision, there's rewards like reducing the amount of time that you're on supervision. There you can make people report more often or less often. So there's a lot of smaller rewards and a lot of smaller sanctions that we can use instead of just always holding over people's head that you're going to get locked back up if you make the slightest misstep.
As we wrap up, David, do you think that the way we think about crime and punishment in America has changed a lot to where we would make some significant changes that we wouldn't have made even, say, 10 years ago?
I think so. I think people are realizing we need to be concerned really about public safety. We need to be concerned about rehabilitation. We need to be concerned about helping people become productive members of society, not just hitting them over the head time after time after time.
David, thanks for joining us today.
All right. Thank you very much, Rob.
That's David Liners, State Director of Wisdom, a grassroots faith-based organization that calls for criminal justice reform. He was with us to talk about his concerns about the criminal justice measures in Governor Evers' budget and what he wants to see more of. Yesterday on the show, we heard from Department of Corrections Secretary-designee Kevin Carr. You can find that interview online at WPR.org.